This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was former Chicago Police Superintendent and present mayoral candidate, Gary McCarthy. Gary's theme is Chicago's at the Crossroads, a challenge for change. He said his DNA has been tested and public service is in his DNA. That's why he's running for mayor. He said, I'm not a politician, but I would be a great public servant. He said the number one issue in the city of Chicago is crime, but candidates are reluctant to talk about crime. But he's not. He pointed out that during his first 3 years as police superintendent, 2013 to 2015, there were only 1,215 murders in the city of Chicago. Since then, the number has zoomed to 1,871. He stated categorically that Amazon did not come to Chicago because of Chicago's crime rate. He said, we may have the worst social economic divide in the United States. The city, he says, needs functional policing and incredible criminal justice reform. With regard to dealing with the African American and other minority communities, Gary McCarthy said, we have never had the trust that we deserve in African American communities because of racist policies and laws. We must restore trust in government before we can get trust in the Chicago Police Department. He said, look at how many aldermen have been sent to jail. Look at the red light fiasco. Look at Chicago public school heads that are now behind bars. If elected, he promised that his administration would be unlike predecessors. His would be accessible, transparent, and honest. He said, we need to bring modern management techniques to government, and he'll start by hiring a chief integrity officer who will work with him and the ethics officers to bring about honesty in government. He's a supporter of only two terms for mayor. He said TIF funding should be used a legal way to knock out, it was a knock at present TIF policies. With regard to the new police academy, which he projected at a budget cost of $95 million, he said this will eventually reach $180 million. It is not necessary. Curriculum and officers will lead to better law enforcement and not bricks and mortar. When asked about many of the youth in Chicago who are committing crimes, he said we need to bring back vocational and trade schools. We need these people to be trained to help build affordable housing with people in those neighborhoods. In order to reduce crime, he point blank said, we must end control from the fifth floor in City Hall. We must end political manipulation. We cannot legislate good policing. Criminals in Chicago, he concluded by saying, they don't drop their guns anymore. They have more fear of gangs than of going to jail in the city of Chicago. He said, we can't just let people out of jail. His administration, if elected, will be a compassionate one and not an insane one that expects sane results.
So this is a rehearse, but in the remarks today, it would be fantastic for the City Club members to hear where our speaker was when the second plane hit the South Tower. Keep that in mind. Ladies and gentlemen, Gary McCarthy.
Well, that certainly went sideways quickly. Jay, thank you for the introduction. Thank you all for being here today. I guess I'll cover that first because it's not in my written remarks. I was going to talk about crime. Go figure, right?
That was a crime.
Yeah, it was a crime. It was a murder of a lot of people. So I was the Deputy Commissioner of Operations for the NYPD on 9/11, and I had just gotten to the south to the World Trade Center when I saw the second plane hit the South Tower, and crime. Let's talk about crime. Let's talk about crime. I'll come back to it if I can. You caught me completely off guard, man. Holy mackerel. So, I'm running for mayor, and I kind of I kind of joke that I've never really chosen my path in life. It always seems to be chosen for me. And I couldn't have predicted this one. But a couple of years ago, people came to me and started asking me, and many of those people are here today, if I was interested in running for elected office. And I said, no way, no how. They kept coming back, and every time they came back, they brought more people. And eventually, my public service DNA got the best of me, and I couldn't stand by and watch what was happening in this city. As Jay mentioned, we have a 2-year-old son, Kristen, and her family live here. We live here. We own property here. Typically, we bought our property in 2015, and since then, property taxes have gone up 40%. I guess everybody else is subject to the same issue. But in thinking about running for mayor, looking at the polling and speaking to people across Chicago, it's pretty obvious that the number one issue in this city is crime. And I hear people purposely probably not talking about it because, A, they probably may not have solutions. B, if they do, it may not be a politically expedient to talk about it because it could be a third rail. But I need to tell you something. Nothing's going to change in this city until we first make it safe. And I'm going to say that over and over again. We can no longer say, not in my backyard in this city. Because living right here in River North, we hear gunshots outside of our apartment building frequently, more frequently than I like to point out. So how is it that we got to this place? And I just want to show you where we are. We love charts in policing and statistics. They're very, very important. And what I'm going to do is help you read this from left to right. The blue bars on the left are 2013, 2014, and 2015 murder rates here in the city of Chicago. Those were the last 3 years that I was superintendent of police. If you take a look at 2016, 17, and 18, there's a huge leap in the numbers. And just to read from 2013, there's 384. 2016, there's 712. That's remarkable. These numbers, if you add up 16 to 18 and 13 to 15, represents about 652 more people murdered in this city over the last 3 years than the previous 3 years. You want to know why Amazon didn't come here? There it is right there, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing's going to change in this city until we first make it safe. That's a 65% increase in the murder rate over the last 3 years in this city. So we're going to talk about crime. And to talk about crime, you may be surprised to hear that I've got to talk about a couple of other things first. And the first thing that we need to talk about is legitimacy. Legitimacy in city government, everybody talks about legitimacy in policing, but I want to talk about both, okay? The second thing that we have to talk about is something that nobody seems to want to do. Well, first of all, nobody wants to talk about legitimacy, right? We kind of shrug our shoulders and accept it for what it is. Nothing's ever going to change in Chicago. Well, here's what I have to say. Nothing's going to change until somebody changes it. And this is a discussion that I have all the time. The second issue is recognizing and addressing the social economic divide that exists not just in this country, but perhaps worse in this city than any place else in the country right now. That social economic divide is the source of anger that we experience on a daily basis in the disenfranchised communities. It's less involved with policing. That's the tip of the iceberg. The 90% of that iceberg is underwater. The third issue that we need is functional policing. Kind of simple, right? But if you notice, I didn't start with policing. That's what everybody wants to talk about all the time. And the last thing that we need is criminal justice reform. Now, these four tenets have to work together if we're going to succeed. One of the things that I talk about all the time is our platform revolves around first making the city safe, second of all, addressing the taxes and the economy of the city, and third of all, addressing the education system. And I call it a three-legged stool. And we can't succeed in one and not succeed in another. In other words, if all three of those do not succeed, the city will fail. The stool will fall over. And it's the same issue as I'm going to talk about here with crime. The first thing, legitimacy. And everybody talks about trust in the police, right? Everybody talks about reestablishing trust in the African-American community. And I scoff at that. because you can't reestablish something that you never had. And let's talk about the history of African Americans in this country that started with slavery, then went to black codes. From there, it went to segregation, Jim Crow, and now mass incarceration all at the same time. That social economic divide has been fostered in this city by racist policies and laws like redlining. And I love when people say Chicago is the most segregated city in the country. And I agree. I agree. It's a segregated city. But the only way that we're going to get over that segregation is by exposure. We shouldn't insist on segregation, which I hear people say all the time. They want black officers and black commanders in African-American neighborhoods. And I, crazy me, I actually put a Caucasian commander in Englewood for the first time since the early 60s in this city. And I put an African-American commander north of Division Street for the first time ever in the history of the Chicago Police Department. And the guy who went north of Division Street led the city in crime reduction. And when I sent Leo Schmitz, who's the head of the Illinois State Police right now, to Englewood, there were protests when he got there. And then there were protests when we took him out, too, because they didn't want him to leave. So we have to have that exposure. And the bottom line is, as far as legitimacy goes, we have a culture of illegitimacy in city government. We joke about it. We call it the Chicago way. When I tell people stories about the things I've experienced, they say things like, "Welcome to Chicago." But it's all summed up in a statement that goes back decades in this city, that goes back to the machine politics of, we don't want nobody, come on, say it with me, nobody's cent, right? Just think about that for a second. And it's my opinion that that is still in place today. So first and foremost, we have to restore trust in government before we can even talk about trust in the police department. And that doesn't exist here in Chicago. We expect to be lied to. We still have aldermen going to jail. And over the last, 8 years, we've had problem after problem. We have the CPS sex abuse scandal, which might still be going on, which was reported back then and ignored until one of the victims actually murdered the individual who sexually abused them. Then all of a sudden, the complaints were investigated. That's not okay. Unsanitary conditions in our schools and fudging the numbers, giving the school the location that's going to be inspected when they come to inspect whether or not the schools are being properly cleaned. Ironically, those places were only cleaned 91% of the time. That's how good we are here at getting that done. Racism in the water department, the red light camera bribery scheme, right? Everybody knows about that. Barbara Bird Bennett, as the head of the school system, going to federal prison. The Corporation Council was sanctioned over and over again by judges for failing to turn over discovery in cases over and over again. Numerous CPS CEOs fired or going to jail for covering up or fudging numbers. This is just part of our culture, and everybody kind of shrugs their shoulders at it. I want to add a couple more, and this hits right at the police department. And I love the police department, don't get me wrong. But things have to change culturally in this city, and I have to put this stuff on your radars because I'm not sure people really got it. When you saw the police department marching on the Dan Ryan, they were in violation of state law in the jurisdiction of the Illinois State Police. Do you realize that? And yet, on Lakeshore Drive, the city actually closed down Lakeshore Drive to facilitate the protesters' illegal activity on Lakeshore Drive. What the heck is going on here? What the heck is going on here? And in one masterstroke, in appointing the police superintendent, which the process for doing that is defined by municipal law, the mayor was able to get the city council to change the law for one day so he could appoint whoever he wanted to. Welcome to Chicago, right? That's what we hear over and over again. It's time to change how we do business in Chicago. The people of Chicago deserve honesty, transparency, and legitimacy from city government. They deserve access to their elected officials. And for those reasons, I can't read my handwriting, for those reasons, we have to shake Chicago out of its slumber because it doesn't have to be like this. It's never going to change until somebody changes it. So what do we have to do? What gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets done. We need to bring business management to city government. We have to start measuring things. If anybody in this room ran their business like city government is run, you would be on the corner with a cup and a sign and a heartbeat. It's really that simple, because it's politics as usual in Chicago. And until somebody starts managing everything, and I see it in everything. I see it in buses lined up back to back to back on the same routes going southbound on LaSalle and blocking traffic, to where we rip up streets, right? And when we rip up streets, which, by the way, finally Grand is actually open because it's been messed with for a very, very long time. So we have to focus on that. We have to have legitimacy. We have to eliminate pay for play. And one of the things that we're going to do is hire a chief integrity officer. And that individual will work closely with me, the inspector general, and the Board of Ethics to focus on ethics in city government. It's not an option, folks. We need a top-to-bottom review of all city spending. It's really that simple. And make sure that all decisions were based upon merit in all our contracts that we give out. Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a politician. I'm a public servant. And my expectation is that anybody in my administration will be a public servant providing customer service to the public. Imagine customer service in City Hall. Imagine not getting your fingers slammed on a gate because it's 401. I mean, the first six answers out of anybody in City Hall is no. And this might be the best part, and Kristen will enjoy this. I support term limits for the mayor. If it's good enough for the president, two terms as mayor in the city of Chicago, I believe is enough. And Kristen's looking at me saying, I told you one. Yeah, see? I knew it. Next, we have to recognize and address the social economic divide in this city. For too long, it's been a tale of two cities, the haves and the have-nots. African Americans and Hispanics in this city, their median income doesn't even approach half of their white counterparts. That's not okay. We have neighborhoods that are withering on the vine in this city. We have neighborhoods on the south and the west sides of the city that have been overlooked and neglected. They've been neglected economically. They've been overlooked politically. They have been forgotten educationally. There are children in these communities who don't believe that they deserve any better. And I'm here to tell you, yes, they do deserve better. And we're going to bring prosperity to those communities through smart economic policies that will help develop economies of hope in those neighborhoods. And I want you to think about this. If you have high levels of crime and murder, if there's an exodus of people leaving your neighborhood because of gun violence, if there are no services being provided, if there are no jobs and there's no hope, why wouldn't you become a criminal? What do you have to lose? And here's a bigger question. If you're a criminal in one of those neighborhoods, where are you going to go to commit your crimes? You're going to rob people who don't have anything to steal? This is why we can no longer say, not in my backyard in this city. And I got to tell you, I think that's a good awakening for this city because everybody seems to feel it. We will create more living wage jobs in those communities through smart economic policies. We will use TIF funding in a fair, transparent, and legal way. How about that? The method to use TIF funding is defined by state law. Yet, we fly in the face of it. It's supposed to be used in blighted neighborhoods, but for the TIF funding, those neighborhoods would remain blighted. Block 37, blighted neighborhood. Dearborn, State, Randolph, Washington. Navy Pier, blighted neighborhood. Come on, folks. It's not okay. And one of the things that we need to talk about, just to be clear, is we've got to stop political spending. We've got to stop spending millions and millions of dollars on projects to feed your constituencies. We need to do needs-based spending. We shouldn't be pulling services from the south and the west side and closing schools there when we're investing $62 million in a bike path down by Navy Pier, when we're investing $10 million in expanding the Riverwalk. It's pretty nice the way it is. But the ultimate one to me is the $95 million police academy, which we all know is $180 million because nothing gets done on time or on budget in Chicago. And that's just so we could point at it and say, look, we're all about police reform. The building will not train the officers any better. The trainers will train the officers, and the training curriculum will train the officers. It can be done in an open lot. We've got to stop borrowing to pay our debt all at the same time. Do you know that in 2016, we bonded $500 million to pay for CPS's operating budget for a year? I want you to think about this. Take out your MasterCard. Put every operating expense you have on it for the next year, food, gas, electricity, car, mortgage, you name it. At the end of the year, pay it with your Visa and tell me how you're doing a year later. We're paying $70,000 a day in interest on that loan. It's unconscionable, and that's going to go for like 30 years, something along those lines. We need smart economic policies to build up these local businesses. And one of the things that is really obvious is that I will work with the trade unions to bring their apprentice programs into the high schools and bring back the vocational schools and the trade schools, especially in those neighborhoods where there's no hope and no jobs. And then we're going to give small businesses and startups, and by the way, that includes technology, right? Technology obviously is a burgeoning field that we want to put in young people's hands. And then I'm going to give small businesses and startups tax incentives to go to those neighborhoods to create the economy so those young, trained individuals now can have some place where they're going to work. And just to put a cherry on top of it, how about this? How about we assume some of those abandoned properties out there that were selling for a dollar, rehab them on the cheap with this workforce, creating an economy to create affordable housing all at the same time? That's why I say each one of these issues is so inexorably intertwined, we can't really separate them out. Now I can talk about policing. How's that, since we're talking about crime? Politics over best practices in policing is what got us to the place where we are today. Politics over best practices in policing. The first thing we need to do to reduce crime in this city is to stop the political manipulation of the Chicago Police Department. Back in 2014, President Obama did something really good. He put together the President's 21st Century Task Force on Policing, and a report came out later on in 2015. And what that was a group of really smart police chiefs, criminologists, social scientists, community activists, and so on. And they went around the country and collected best practices from the community, from social scientists, criminologists, and yes, even police experts. And then what they did was they put all of that into a report. And when they put it into a report with recommendations of what policing should be doing today, the most ironic thing that I found was that more than 90% of those recommendations came right out of this Chicago Strategic Policing Plan that we did in 2013. More than 90%. The Department of Justice, who came here to investigate our policies and practices, hired Bob Tracy, who was our chief of crime control strategies, to go around the country and teach other departments in the country what we were doing here in Chicago while they were investigating our policies and practices. I'm having a little trouble with that. But at the end of the day, everybody says, what are we going to do about crime? And I say, we know how to do this. I could take this plan or the president's plan and give it to anybody in this room, and you can create functional policing, reduce crime, reduce complaints against officers, make less arrests, and get better results. I can do that. But we refuse to do it here in Chicago because of our politics. So what's the answer? We have to be prepared for tough talk on the one hand and some sensitive talk on the other hand. But we cannot legislate good policing. I'm going to give you two examples. The first one is the draft consent decree, which is about to be enacted. And I have a number of questions about this that haven't been answered by anybody. I need to know, did somebody bring Kiernan here? Who was the police policy expert who participated in the creation of that draft consent decree? Because it's my understanding that there was not one. What we had was a bunch of legislators, some politicians, community activists, and some other folks sitting around a table saying what policing should be doing. And what did they do? They actually regurgitated a whole series of things that are already policies in the department. My favorite one, is that the police should not shoot at moving vehicles unless deadly physical force other than the vehicle is being used against them or another. That's brilliant. It's so brilliant we did it in the end of 2014. But here it is recommended as something we need to do. The consent decree is heavy on documentation by supervisors. So I want you to think about this. Instead of supervising officers in the field, sergeant's going to be sitting behind a desk saying, how many tickets did you write today? How many people did you stop today? Supervision is going to go down. That's not a recipe for disaster, is it? Then at the same time, the cost of a consent decree is enormous. Paying the monitor and all the other things that need to happen. By the way, I know a number of people in that cottage industry of monitors. I would not assign some of them to run a police district in the city of Chicago, let alone to oversee required changes within police culture. But the cost is overwhelming. And the bottom line is the monitor is the person who makes the decision as to when the department is in substantial compliance and can get out of the consent decree. Think about it. I'm getting paid by doing this, and I'm the one who makes the decision when you can get out of that consent decree. And then the last thing is this. Since this is in agreement with the state attorney general, are these now the policing standards for every department in the state? Because if they're not, they have to be. You can't hold one department to one standard and everybody else to another. The other one that I want to give you as far as legislation is one that's near and dear to my heart, Senate Bill 1304. And whether or not you know it, Senate Bill 1304 is the document that created the investigative stop report, which is used today in the Chicago Police Department. Now, everybody doesn't seem to understand that by signing the ACLU agreement, we came into compliance with Senate Bill 1304. And in case people don't get what that means, it means that state law supersedes a civil agreement. State law requires that we collect all this various data every time we stop somebody, which results in a 4-page report. But here's the part of this that I absolutely love, that nobody seems to know. Once all that data is collected, in a masterstroke of legislative genius, we decided that all that data needs to go to the Illinois State Department of Transportation. What? What are they going to use it to fix traffic on the Kennedy? What is the point of that? So the bottom line is police experts need to be involved in policing, and you can't legislate it. The results of this have been dramatic in the city, as you can see in those numbers. As superintendent, using the plan that we put together in Chicago, we were able to reduce crime by almost 40% over the almost 5 years that I was the superintendent. We had back-to-back years of murder rates that the city hasn't seen since 1965. We had significant reductions in complaints against our officers. We made thousands less arrests because we didn't just focus on arresting everybody. We focused on arresting the right person at the right place for the right reason. And at the same time, we still got 23% more gun arrests than we were getting before. But the one that nobody seems to know is that there was almost a 70% reduction in police-related shootings under my tenure because of training, supervision, and policy decisions. Almost 70% reduction in police shootings. But one shooting obviously blew up the world here. The last bullet that I have to give you is criminal justice reform. And I can tell you, if we achieve those first three items, it's going to fail unless we get this one fixed. And this is in control of people at the county, not the people in the city of Chicago, which is a big problem, and I want you to remember that, who are being supported by my friends outside. The bottom line is, in 2015, we started tracking what happens when we make all those gun arrests. And it turns out that on the first day of the second quarter, we had arrested 698 people 702 times with firearms in a 90-day period. Well, how can that be? We arrested four people twice over a 90-day period with illegal firearms, loaded firearms on the street. And on day one, April 1st of the second quarter, 75% of the people who we arrested overall were back on the street. And three out of four of those individuals that we locked up twice with illegal guns in a 90-day period were on the street. Why wouldn't you be a criminal? One of the things that fascinated me, I literally have been involved in hundreds of gun arrests in my police career, and I did it in New York, I did it in New Jersey, and then I did it here. The criminals here don't drop their guns. And I couldn't figure out why until finally it came to me that the sanction from the gang for losing the gun is greater than the sanction from the criminal justice system here in Cook County. Why wouldn't you carry a gun? Why wouldn't you carry a gun? In New York, New York State did something remarkable. Years ago, when we started doing proactive policing, probably in the middle 90s, going into the 2000s, what they did was they repealed something called the draconian Rockefeller drug laws. And what that meant was, if you get caught with a little bit of crack, you go to jail for a very long time. First of all, you'll be a little surprised to know that I'm not even sure that possession of small levels of narcotics is even a crime at this point. Because I've arrested countless burglars, and burglars, believe it or not, without exception, are heroin junkies. And one of the things that we would do to reduce burglaries was heroin possession enforcement, right? Kind of stands. If they're in jail for that, they're not committing a burglary. But by putting that heroin junkie in jail for 30 days for possession of 10 bags of heroin, are we changing his behavior? No. He's going to come out and do the same damn things that he was doing before because he's addicted to narcotics. But I'll tell you what is a crime. When I put a gun in your stomach and I say, give me your money, man, that's a crime for sure, don't you think? Well, in New York, we repealed these drug laws and we stiffened the penalties for illegal possession of a loaded firearm. The most amazing things happened. Incarceration rates went down. Murder rates went down. Arrests for illegal possession of a loaded firearm went down. And last year, in New York City, there were 290 murders in a city three times the size of Chicago. And we had 770 in 2016. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't have to be like this. But we have to have these difficult conversations. We have to figure out how we got here by looking backwards if we're going to figure out where we're going to go looking forward. We have to take these issues head on. And I joke about it, but I mean it. I'm a Taurus, I'm a linebacker, and I'm Irish. I know how to take things head on. I don't know how to go around them in some cases. Right, Kristen? And at the same time, we have to address mass incarceration. And I need to explain something because you're going to hear more about this moving forward in this campaign. Mass incarceration is about the failed war on narcotics that started in the 90s under President Reagan and locking up people for narcotics. And the separate issue, especially here in Cook County, is indigent individuals who get caught up in the system for low-level crimes that can't bond out. That's mass incarceration. We need criminal justice reform, like I talked about in New York State, that focused on what we wanted to do, which was reduce violent crime. The answer is not to let everybody out of jail, which unfortunately puts us in the condition that we're in today. When a four-time convicted felon wearing body armor with an extended magazine can kill a police commander in the shadow of City Hall in the middle of the afternoon in the business district of Chicago, it's time to wake up. We got to shake ourselves out of this slumber, and we got to recognize what we need to do to move this city forward. One of my favorite sayings, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting a different result. What we need to do is have a compassionate government, a government that doesn't shut down schools and pull social services or pull retirees' health care benefits after they've served the city for God knows how long. We've got to have a government that is open and transparent. I said before, what gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets done. Nothing in this city is being managed except the politics of we don't want nobody, nobody sent. And it's for that reason that I'm going to call on you, Jay, and Al, to take a look at the fact that we need to have a debate, maybe even here at the City Club, where we could get these career machine politicians and bureaucrats who are now running in the race and trying to distinguish themselves from the problems that they've been a part of creating for the last God knows how many decades in this city, to come here and answer the questions about what are you going to do different moving forward if you didn't do it different in the past. I might be on a little bit of a rant, but at this point I'm going to stop. Thank you for your attention, and I guess I have to take some questions right now, Ed.
Oh, sure.
Sorry.
No problem. Thank you very much. Gary, a lot of interesting questions here. And I'm sure as a candidate and a former superintendent of police and a street officer, you've handled all these toughies. So let's get started. Peter Scozzi down here with the BNSF family wants to know what it will be your position on having an elected school board.
So one of the things that I've learned being a manager is that accountability without authority equals failure. And quite honestly, that's exactly what happened with the Laquan McDonald case. I was not in charge of the department's discipline system. I was not in charge of the investigation, yet I was accountable for every officer's behavior, wasn't I? And when the cover-up happened in City Hall on the civil side, we were able to kind of throw that into a washing machine and somehow make it come out and splash back on the department. So my position is that if I'm going to be accountable for the school system, I need to have some like-minded people on that board who are going to go along with the things that I'm talking about, like bringing back trade schools and vocations and apprenticeships in the schools, working with the unions to make that happen. If I just give up complete control, I don't know what could happen. And therefore, my position is a hybrid, not fully elected, not fully appointed, give the community some say-so on what's happening there, and at the same time at least have some people on there that will be like-minded like myself.
Thank you very much. We have a variety of questions here. Believe me, they don't all deal with crime. So this is from Reed Estreicher, who's with Samsung/Two Ties Production. LLC. If you don't know what that is, Google it. Okay. Question. As Austin, Pittsburgh, and Minneapolis have made considerable strides to attract tech companies and have experienced significant growth as a result, what are your plans to attract tech companies in similar ways? And I noticed in your comments you felt that the primary reason why Amazon chose to go elsewhere was the issue of crime in Chicago.
Yeah, I think I kind of addressed this. My goal is to create the trained workforces and make those conditions attractive for the startups and the small businesses to go and support those workforces that we're creating. Like I said, I think that trade schools need to kind of segue into the 21st century and kind of move away from auto mechanics and carpentry and electricians and plumbers, which we're going to need for a long time. But by the same token, jump into that tech world and start really getting that engine revving in places like Englewood, Austin, West Lawndale, places that need it.
Okay, thank you. This is from Antoine Ratliff, who's affiliated with the Celestial Ministries. With your previous relationship with Mayor Emanuel and all that's come from the Van Dyke conviction, why should the city of Chicago trust you? How can you ensure citizens you won't just support policies that only benefit the CPD?
Because I've got 35 years of a track record that says that I've done otherwise. First of all, that's the real answer to it. But I shouldn't talk about my relationship with the soon-to-be previous mayor here. Let's just say that probably the reason I'm not the superintendent today is because I'm not a go-along to get-along type person. Let's be clear about that. Second of all, we're going to engage in something called truth-telling. How's that for a concept in Chicago? We're going to tell the truth about what happened. There should be a criminal prosecution for the cover-up of the Laquan McDonald video, and it should go all the way to the fifth floor. And I'm not done with it. I've spoken to numerous law enforcement agencies about it, and nobody wants to touch it because of the politics of it. This is part of the problem in this city. We still have aldermen going to jail. And it's going to continue until such time as you can't skirt the law. And in the case of that video, again, accountability without authority.
Okay, thank you very much. The pension question. This is from Kevin Graham with the FOP and sort of myself. How would you address the pension underfunding, which some experts say may reach $600 million by 2022?
So before the last election, during the runoff, I heard Chuy Garcia say something that I thought was really an absurd statement. When asked about his fiscal policy, he said, "I'll tell you the day after I'm elected, because I don't know what's in the books." And I thought that was really a turning point where he really hurt himself in the campaign. We have a fiscal policy. It's called, we're not going to do political spending. We're going to do needs-based spending. And I can tell you this, there's so many different places where money is hidden in this budget that we're going to do forensic accounting. And I can guarantee the citizens of Chicago at least a one-year tax moratorium, an increase on tax moratorium, a moratorium on tax increase in Chicago. Because instead of using 31% of our property taxes for TIF funding, we'll use, 27% to prevent us from having to raise property taxes yet again. That was $660 million last year. There's surplus in the TIF funding that could be put into the pensions. There's all sorts of other things that we can do. And we're going to do forensic accounting, maybe even some more prosecutions. I'm all in favor of that stuff. But at the same time, it's going to take like a 10-year plan to get out of where we are because we didn't put into the pension fund for 11 years. But the first thing we have to do is get the city into the black. And when you're spending, I think I gave you $242 million of political spending before between the police academy, the Riverwalk, and the bike path. Just think about that for a second. It's $252 million. And at the same time, $130 million we have to get every year to restore retirees' health benefits. The measure of a society is how it treats its children and its seniors. And we are obviously failing.
Thank you. Thank you. This is from Lee Weinman. Lee, where are you? Straight back there. Lee, I see you're not a member of the City Club, but we won't hold that against you because we have a very strict admission requirement. You come up with $50, cash, credit, whatever, you are in, okay? And by the way, folks, it's tax deductible, so, you're doing your year-end planning.
Well, you
planning.
Can give it to me, Lee.
Absolutely, whatever. What if he's related to Bert Wyman? Remember the old automobile dealer? Okay, anyhow, Lee says, I have had two dear friends that have moved out of Chicago because of crime and school issues. What will you do to reverse this trend?
Well, I think I actually kind of addressed that, but one of the things that I say is the first thing we need to do is stop the exodus from the city. We're the third largest city in the country. We're about to become the fifth or the sixth, because while we're losing population, places like Atlanta, Dallas-Fort Worth, and Houston are gaining population. And because we're losing our population, we're losing our tax base. And because we're losing our tax base, everybody who lives here has to pay more taxes. And because we're paying more taxes in gun violence, people are leaving the city. And because we don't have our tax base, we're closing schools and pulling social services, which is causing more gun violence. So this is what I was talking about when I say that three-legged stool. Each one of those issues impacts on the other, and you can't fix one and succeed. Each one of those issues needs to be addressed in a more holistic plan. And Lee, you heard a little bit of the plan for education and neighborhood revitalization and reinvestment in those neighborhoods. But we also have to do something about putting those social services right into the schools instead of closing the schools and pulling those social services. Because And it needs to be done in a two-tier fashion. In other words, treat the family at the same time. Make the schools a hub of the community where people can go to get help and play basketball. But what happens outside the school affects what happens inside the school. So it's a very complicated scenario. The crime impacts the kids. The home life impacts the kids. The lack of social services impacts the kids. It all affects crime. And it all has to do with the exodus. So that big package has to be addressed all at the same time. It's all part of our platform. We've got a dynamite plan for it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Gary, so when you're elected mayor, always one of the questions that comes up for whoever becomes mayor is either retaining or seeking a new police superintendent. And one of the debates always is, should we promote from within the department the men and women who serve and protect, or should we do a nationwide search? Could you share with us your thoughts on that issue?
So, I think that there's a lot of value to the fact that I'm looking at Chicago with fresh eyes, rather than the folks who have been bureaucrats and politicians here for decades. They're part of the problem. We have to change the culture, and you can't change a culture from within very easily until somebody tells you you have a cultural problem, and you're not going to recognize that from within. I think that there's a lot of value in people coming up through the ranks. I did it in the NYPD, but then I ventured out, right? I ascended to a very high position in the NYPD, and I'll answer your question at the end of this statement. But then I went to Newark, New Jersey. And when I started asking questions, well, why do we do it this way? The answer always was, well, that's the way we've always done it. And that's what I hear here in Chicago. Yet every place I go, everybody says Chicago needs change. One of my favorite sayings is there's two things people don't like, the way things are and change, right? So what are we going to do? I think that there's value in both of that. I think that we don't have to do that process, do we? Because that's not what we did last time, is conduct a national search. We just changed the law for one day. Forgive my sarcasm. But I mean, that's really what's wrong here. We're too embedded in this is the way we need to do things. We need to open our eyes to fresh ideas. So I think that there's value from within, and I think there's value from without. It's not one or the other. You got to select three candidates out of a pool of 10 that come in for interviews. So you're going to get at least a couple from the outside and a couple from inside.
Okay, time for a couple last questions. This is from Jane Johnson. Jane, where are you? Come on, you asked a question. Put up your hand.
Hi, Jane.
Oh, thanks, Jane. Back there, wearing the red hat. You know this is a setup. First.
It's happened to me before.
But you're tough, and that's why we have this forum. Thank you, sir, for your service. Then she gets rough. President Trump is blamed for racism and not bringing people together. How do you feel that you are being blamed for the Laquan McDonald case, even though Mayor Emanuel withheld details until the last mayoral election was over?
Well, obviously, I mean, I'm troubled by it. And what's more frustrating is that, where's John Davis, my public information guy for the campaign? John Davis and I have literally sat down with numerous press outlets and done hours of interviews and given documentation of what happened, when it happened, in the cover-up of that video. And they won't run with it. I don't understand it. There was an article that just came out, finally, an African-American magazine called Indigo, just did an in-depth interview and talked about this issue at length. People are always going to talk about you when you're in the public eye. I mean, I pull up out here and dealing with people with Trump masks and signs, 16 shots in a cover-up. And I mean, I have to deal with that being in public service. I can do that. But at the end of the day, I'm still a human being, and underneath all of it, it definitely bothers me. That's why I used to work out a lot. The last 2 months I haven't, I haven't had the time. But, you know, the public service drives me. And I want to answer Jay's question now. Just so everybody knows, when the second plane hit the South Tower, I was number 3 or 4 in the police department, depending on how you look at the organizational chart. And there was a call over the radio from a police officer who said, a second plane just hit the South Tower. Notify the military. We need air cover. We're under attack. You want to talk about feeling helpless? I've never felt so helpless in my life. I don't know how to notify the military. Those protocols were not in place at that time. Now they are. But the public service that I've experienced for 35 years, the friends I've lost along the way, and when I say lost, that day we lost 23 police officers from NYPD, 13 of them were friends. My son, my wife, my family, that's what drives me to keep going forward in spite of craziness like that. And, you know, there's nothing like it. And that's why I'm doing this. I just can't stand by and watch it when I know how to fix it, in spite of the toll it takes on me and sometimes my family. And that's why it's really important that I keep acknowledging my family. So, thank you.